is Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce down. It's three in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network. Your Rowdies Talk Radio, your green and gold gospel, presented by Roughneck Scarves and Golden Gold Press. No, you didn't miss the theme music. We're on location, and I always forget something. Tonight it was the music, so we're gonna live without it for one night. We'll edit it in for the podcast version. So those of you guys listening to this later on in the week will probably be more confused than normal at what we're saying right now. So let's start off by saying bonjour. My name is Matt. And sitting next to me tonight, because we're live on location at the Shamrock Pub in Sarasota, Stephen, how are you doing, Stephen?
Learning to speak French, apparently.
I will point out that for tonight's show, both of us are here for the entire show. One of us is not in Montreal. We'll get to all that later.
No, that's an entirely different crew with an entirely different set of owners, and they're going to do an entirely different show. In fact, that's where the music is. We had to send the file, and we forgot it was our only set, and so they have the only audio file for music. So when we're done, we'll like re-record the podcast, and they're going to send it back to us for the playoff round, and that's going to be how that works out.
I just don't know what to call it yet, other than Dead Horse. All right, we promise we're going to get to it. We've got a kind of a rarity in that we're up against a hard deadline tonight because of other events going on at the pub. So we've got till 9 o'clock to do this. Let's hop in and get started. First off, for those of us who have lived through the last few days, might have forgotten last weekend the Rowdies did play a game and won on the road, which we should really, I guess, stop being surprised about. But went up to Bethlehem. For the Bethlehem's first game in actual Bethlehem this year, and won 2-1, thanks to a garbage penalty that shouldn't have been called, and the game should have been 2-0. Anyway, Stephen, you're good, bad, ugly. Your takes from the game.
Well, I'll say this: I am loving the fact that we absolutely just crush on the road. So, I mean. This is fantastic. This is amazing, the fact that we are, I mean, we're killing it on the road. I mean, this is unbelievable, our road record.
Was it now 5 wins, 2 draws?
5 wins, and the more important thing is the fact that we're only a couple of wins away from our best road record ever.
Like the next one, I think? Yeah, the next one
now, keep in mind, it's not the only time. We've actually had winning records on the road before. We actually did, 2013, if memory serves correct, if I looked it up correctly earlier this week. We had like one more win than a loss, because we had like a lot of draws. It was like 5 wins, 4 draws, 4 losses, or something like that. So it wasn't spectacular. So, I mean, we're not on the verge of having like that type of record broken. But still, I mean, this is incredible, the fact that we've actually solved the problem of winning games on the road. And not just winning, we absolutely dominated like literally every aspect of that match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we might as well have been playing like an under 12 boys team. I mean, it was silly.
Although, let's point out to boost ourselves up some more. Two of the players from that game One of them is starting for Philadelphia Union tonight, the goalkeeper, and another one is on the bench for tonight's game, who started for the Steel on Saturday.
Let's just face it, though; those are almost like pity assignments. It's one of those things where they just need some bodies because of the Gold Cup, I'm sure. So
right. So overall, your impressions from the game? What? There's very little bad or ugly, and other than that stupid penalty call, but what stood out to you is probably the best thing overall.
Yeah, I mean, that honestly, it's one of those games where, like, when everything goes right, how do you critique it? I mean, and to a certain degree, right? Like, that's an amazing game. I mean, every aspect of that, it's almost like Philly just didn't even, or, well, sorry, Bethlehem. Like, it's, I mean, it, funny enough, they actually played in Bethlehem this week, so it's like, I really shouldn't screw that up this week of all weeks, but that, I mean, come on, every aspect of that, it's like the Steel didn't even come out to play the game.
Tejada got a little soon to be. I don't want to say it was a send off. I think he's still around for another game or two before he goes off to Panama.
Oh yeah,
but definitely showed why Panama's interested in him. Had a foot in every goal.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I'm looking at that game, I mean, obviously we were playing this immense, intense pressure, and that was, I think, the big thing is the fact that we prevented Bethlehem from getting any kind of rhythm there. For the first 75 minutes of that game, you know, and that was the thing, is that was all pressure. That was all Jan Ekra. That was all Jordan Doherty. That was all
Caleb Richards.
I mean, that's Steinberger. That's the name I was slipping my mind on there. I mean, that's primarily the three midfielders just shutting everything down the moment they get the ball. And we swarmed them from the moment that ball was kicked off until about. That would be my only critique. It's right around the 75th minute, you could tell there was like an attitude shift where all of a sudden, like, all 11 players were inside our third of the half. And it was like, wait a second. Why are we not playing the same game plan anymore?
Right.
Like for most of that last 15 minutes, most everybody was on our half of the field and nobody was pressuring up the field. And it was like, stop this. Stop this right now. Get a third. Like, don't give them a sniffing chance at the end of the game with a stupid PK call, because of course what happened is they had a stupid PK call and made it interesting at the end when it should never have been interesting. That game should have been 6-0.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment was, I mean, honestly, the first goal, the fact that Bethlehem's got pretty much all their players back in their own part of the field, most of them in their own box, and Tejada's still unmarked for that ball to just fall in front of him.
Oh, that was hilarious.
And to tap home.
It was hilarious. I mean, when you have two players that go up for a header and both miss, Tejada's going to be open. I think one of the big things about that game, and especially when it came to the two goals in general, at least, and more or less the second goal, obviously the first one was a set piece, but the second goal in particular, first of all, Steinberger's tracking back all game was fantastic. It was phenomenal. His defensive pressure from that spot was more than fantastic. The other thing that I noticed is the fact that we, with Gonzotti, that second goal happens because Seb takes on literally four defenders by himself. When Steinberger takes that ball away in the midfield, he passes it up to Gonzotti. Gonzotti runs straight at the middle of the field with the ball, and four players wrap around him. So guess who's left on a one-on-one out in the far right side? Is Tejada. All by himself, like with just one guy nearly kind of only loosely covering him. So, of course, this is what I've been preaching. This is what I've been saying about what I want from this team is don't be afraid to take people on. Don't be afraid to draw people to you, because guess what's going to happen? You're going to have an open guy on the field somewhere. Just make a small lazy pass, and guess what happens? You take the shot, it goes off the post, and then Seb follows up. It's a perfect. That's exactly what we should be doing, is plays just like that. Especially when we have a quick transition where's a midfield takeaway and you just immediately switch to the offense. That's exactly the way we should be playing.
I was also glad to see that I guess we had to chalk it up to the location, because this was a Bethlehem team with a lot of different players than the last few games that we've played against them in the league. Still managed to get a little chippy near the end.
Yeah, I mean, some of that's going to be frustration, like, especially from their half. I wasn't too concerned about that. The only thing that I'm concerned about is, and I've said this before kind of quietly, privately type of thing, is Chiquite sometimes worries me. Only because, like, he's not afraid to start, like, to start a scene. He's not afraid to try and get under the skin of the opposing team. Don't get me wrong. To a certain degree, I love it. I love that kind of attitude and spunk, and I love the gamesmanship from
it. I think you need a guy like that on your team.
But he's eventually going to get caught. A referee is going to see that he's kind of embellishing it to try and draw a yellow card. He's going to eventually get himself a yellow card when he shouldn't be. And that's one thing that kind of worries me. I don't know. Maybe it becomes a trend. Maybe referees start noticing it. Maybe a linesman's paying attention to it. And in a game where it might matter, maybe that might end up hurting us.
I don't know.
Don't get me wrong, though. I think it's fun. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. Like,
it kind of feels, I mean, like I said, I think you need a guy like that in your team, and I think that's the price you kind of have to pay on occasion for having that kind of guy in the team is a possibility of that happening. I think I know who you're going to say, but give me your man of the match.
Well, I think I said this on Twitter earlier this week, but my man of the match in that game is Steinberger. His defensive play, tracking back, I mean, he is the reason why that Bethlehem could not do anything on offense at all on that first half. And that was because he was just killing everything by quickly switching into a defensive mode. With all the other stuff happening this week, I didn't do the research I wanted to, unfortunately. But, you know, that was easily an amazing performance. But, like, Jan Ekra looked great. Sean Barry looked great. I mean,
I was really impressed. You know, Sean Barry, they said, his second appearance since mid-April. To come in and look like he had no rust on him at all, I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, and I think right now that's the big thing going forward is the fact that it's like, if everybody's basically back, how good is this team?
Well, and I think, and you had mentioned this, I saw in a tweet before the game, and I think it may have been. I don't know that you can base it off of one game and say it's totally answered, but I think we got some answers as to how good Malik Johnson can be.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the things I said before the game, is the fact that it's like, with Leo Fernandez on the bench, that shows how close he was to being match fit last week.
Right.
So that was the thing, as I pointed out on Twitter. So for those of you that don't follow me on Twitter, I try and do a couple of thoughts before each game or you know, like any good media person. You know, we're always trying to spout some theories before games kick off. That was the first thing that I picked up on, was the fact that it's like, Malik, this is his game to prove that he deserves to be in a starting 11. Because Fernandez is going to take his place.
Right.
You know, if he plays poorly in that game. Because Najem's not losing his role. You know, he's been a solid defensive player. Now, that was one of the things, though. When we start looking at players, and we can get into this as far as the discussion for this upcoming week for how we plan this out. But, I mean, there's going to be a very interesting discussion about what types of players you need, not just raw talent, but, like, literally what their role in the formation is. And not everybody, just because you play outside mid, especially on this club, not everybody has the same skill set. So that's going to be something that we're going to get into when we start talking about this upcoming week. But, yeah, Steinberger for me is the man of the match.
Okay.
Set-piece delivery was the reason for the first goal. It was a perfect delivery. And his interception is what directly led. He got the hockey assist for the second goal.
I can see that. I can see people going with Tejada for his involvement in the scoring, and that's always the flashy stuff that sticks out. I really liked Ekra's game. I thought he impressed coming back for his first game in a little while. I mean, there's a lot of good performances all around.
I do have one bad and one ugly.
Okay.
Obviously, I mean, I'm a little upset about the fact that we switched off in the 75th minute, so I'm just going to call that my mild bad for the week. But my ugly, did you see the advertising banner on the side of the field
is this the pizza cone?
For Chank's?
Chank's pizza cone. Yes, I tweeted about it.
What is that?
And it was just like, you know, it's not
what
like...
What devilry thing is going on in Pennsylvania where they are okay with pizza cones?
They must be a big sponsor, too, because this wasn't mixed in with, like... You know, a barrier along the sidelines of all these different advertisers. It was off by itself, kind of like where guys come in when they sub in, so that would always be in the shot. I tweeted. I'm like, I gotta try. Now, last summer,
you couldn't pay me. You could not pay me to try. I saw pictures of it. I went online. I'm like, no.
Oh, I got to check this out.
Absolutely not.
So last summer, my wife and daughter were in West Virginia for like a week, 10 days for one of my daughter's competitions. And they brought me back what they said they were told is like the state delicacy of West Virginia, which is a pizza roll. It's like, it's basically almost like a calzone, or if you took a slice of cheese, of pepperoni pizza, and just rolled it up. And they're like, oh, yeah, they eat these all the time. And now I understand a lot more about West Virginia.
I'm surprised their like national food isn't coal flavored pizza or something like that. Like they use coal, like Parmesan cheese,
coal
they
fired,
just, like, grate it. Yeah, it's coal fired pizza with coal like grated on like Parmesan cheese across the entire top of the pizza. Like, to me, that's West Virginia's national food.
All right, so moving on from the game, we had we thrown out there some other notable games to keep an eye on. And we'll talk more about this table here in just a second. But the three big games involving top 10 versus top 10 teams. Pittsburgh beat Red Bull 2-3-0.
Told you they're good.
Nashville over Ottawa 3-3. And Nashville and Ottawa drew, not over, 3-3. And although the way Ottawa's been playing, maybe getting a 3-3 draw is kind of a win for the opposition. St. Louis 2-2 draw with North Carolina FC. And in fact, if you look at the top 10... from last week and this week, of the teams that started Saturday in the top 10, only the Rowdies and Indy won. Indy's moved up to second in the overall table. Pittsburgh won also and moved into 10th in the overall table, combined with Bethlehem's loss and jumped ahead of them. So everyone else, Red Bull 2 lost, and then everybody else drew. So it was a nice weekend for us to go and get a win. We wanted to put some space between us and other teams, and we did, although every other team except for two in the top 10 has anywhere between 1 to 3 games in hand on us. For example, Indy's right behind us point-wise. They're 3 points back, but they've got 2 games in hand. There are some teams that are going to be making up some of these games this week, or they've got multiple games coming up. So we'll see where that ends up affecting us, but we just have to keep winning. Which Saturday is the midpoint of the season. It's not a fluke anymore. It's a trend, in my opinion, that this is a winning team, especially a winning on the road team. And we're going to have we've played 7 games on the road out of what we've got 30. So seven, like, we still have 10 road games left. So to already have 5 wins out of 7 and a lot more road games coming up, we're actually averaging, 2.4 I saw, points on the road as opposed to like 1.4 at home. So road games might be a nice thing. We've had more home games than road games at this point, so that will affect it. But your top 10, I mean your notable games coming up this weekend. Tonight, actually, Ottawa and Charleston are facing off, and so is Nashville and Red Bull 2. Indy is playing Louisville on Saturday, North Carolina, Nashville, and Charleston, Red Bull 2 on Saturday.
And what's interesting about that is obviously having those notable games on the night. Ottawa and Charleston are currently tied in the 54th minute. That game is going on right now. So, yeah, we'll keep you up to date if we see anything happening in the next hour as far as that's concerned. But that game should be over by the time we're done with this show. So
I think so.
But it's important to note that Ottawa's playing tonight.
Unfortunately, this can't go to like extra time and penalty kicks like a tournament game could.
True.
That would be nice.
True. It's worth also noting, though, that this is only the second midweek game they've had to play all year.
It's because of the metric system, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I
knew it.
Yep. There it is.
I knew it.
There it is.
So
that's how Montreal is going to convince St. Petersburg to do it. They're going to just use funny math, and it's all going to be metric system. That's how they're going to do it.
They're actually going to play 93 games up there, metric games. So your current top 10 overall on the traditional table, Rowdies are still on top, 33 points. Indy 11, 3 points back. Red Bull 2, 1 point behind Indy. Nashville rounds out your top 4. North Carolina FC is in 5th. Louisville 6th. Ottawa in 7th, Charleston in 8th, St. Louis 9th, and you know they were one of the ones when we played them earlier that were it was a top of the table kind of matchup. They've had a little run of poor results and have slipped down, but I think they're still going to be a playoff team by the end. And Pittsburgh is your number 10. There was an article up on the USL site. I don't know if you saw it earlier, talking about the 538 projections about how they're predicting Phoenix wins the cup overall. But one of the things they mentioned in there was if you look at the Eastern Conference top 10 right now, and you look at the space that's starting to open up between the top 10 and the teams underneath them, we might already be looking at the Eastern Conference playoff teams. It's just a matter of jockeying for position.
I 100% believe that. I absolutely 100% believe that. I think we all have. I don't see like Bethlehem Steel or Atlanta United 2 or Birmingham. I don't see them, you know, changing their ways and getting back into this race.
I mean, Bethlehem's got kind of the only chance, but they've already played, what, 16 games, same as us? They're 3 points back, but
they're so far in the hole right now.
Yeah, all the rest of them are, you know, Atlanta United and Birmingham and stuff are 6 points and beyond back. Like, we're halfway. I think you can write those teams off already.
It would take a for any one of those teams to get in at this point, it would take a mammoth collapse from somebody in the top 10 right now.
Yeah, it's not enough for those teams to win. They've got to have some help from above, too.
Exactly. And I would think that if I'm looking at this as far as teams and kind of just projecting, if any team in my mind is going to falter, it's Charleston. That's who my prediction would be. If a team doesn't make the playoffs from the top 10 right now, Charleston's the team that's going to fall apart.
I could see that. I could see, you know, St. Louis has had their last five has been a mix of draws and losses. They're still alive in the Open Cup. I think they're going to have another game and with some fixture congestion coming up that this might start to take a toll on them as well. That could be a possibility. I think Charleston probably would be the most likely, though, at this point. Pittsburgh, like we've been saying, to keep an eye on them. They're starting to round into form a little bit. Two straight wins. Two wins and a draw in their last three. So they're starting to pick up spots, and as they make up games, start to get into the spot that we thought that they would end up being in.
Yep.
So let's hop over, take a look at our points per game table. Indy is your new points per game leader at 2.14 points. Rowdy's right behind, 2.06, so not too far. Red Bull 2, 1.93. Nashville, 1.81. North Carolina at 1.8. Ottawa, this weekend's opponent, 1.71. Louisville City at 1.58. St. Louis, 1.54. Charleston, 1.47. And Pittsburgh at 1.46. If I'm not wrong, this is the first time where the points per game top 10 are the same teams as the traditional. Not the same spots, but the same teams.
Yes. And that's what we're talking about when we say about the fact that the top 10 have really started to separate themselves from the rest of the pack. You see it in points per game because there's a half a point per game difference between the 10th and 11th spot, between Pittsburgh and Bethlehem.
Right.
I mean, you're going from a 1.46 to a 1 flat between 10 and 11. That's monumental in space.
And then you got Bethlehem and Loudoun are 11th and 12th. Excuse me, with 1 point even from their games, and then you drop under 1 point.
Yeah, I
like, I think those teams you can definitely write off. Maybe the points per game, you know, and Loudoun's only played 12 games. They're going to have a big run of home games when their stadium opens up. Maybe there's a slight chance, but I don't foresee it. You know, they've got the coaching change now with their head coach going to take an assistant job in with DC United, so they're going to replace
DC or New England.
New England, yeah.
Yeah,
with arena staff. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have some. I don't want to say stability issues because it's a first-year team, but consistency, I guess, which they still really haven't even found.
Yeah, exactly. And I think right now it's pretty fair to say that three of the top four that should finish the end of the year in that top four, Indy, Rowdies, and Red Bull 2, in my mind, are going to finish three in the top four.
Yeah.
So.
Any other trends you saw on the table that you wanted to mention?
Just the fact that it's finally starting to shape out the way that we've been talking the last couple of weeks. I mean,
yeah, we're starting to see some agreement. This is like, I feel like we're doing like hurricane forecasts. This is like the spaghetti model of of playoff teams.
Yes, there it is. We've done it again. Another opportunity for my Rowdies fandom to cross with meteorology in some fashion, and I'm here for it.
So would you say at this point that Bethlehem and Loudoun are in the cone of uncertainty?
Oh, my gosh.
You appreciate that one, don't you?
I'm nerding out so hard right now.
All right. Anything else from the table before we get into what is going to be a long discussion on various topics?
I'm ready to start talking about various topics.
All right. So first up, as people have probably been waiting to for us to talk about since The news came out yesterday and today. Caleb Richards is in the team of the week, which I think is his first time being mentioned and recognized as such.
It's
so
about
congratulations.
Dang time, considering that man is arguably the player of the year right now. If the voting had to happen right now, he's my vote for player of the year. It's unbelievable to me that it took this long for him to actually get a team of the week honor.
So that brings up something I want to mention next week when we do next week's show is we'll be at the halfway point. I want to go back and talk about who have been our best players in the first half.
All right. Well, I already
so keep
gave
that in mind. Yeah, I mean,
spoiler
that's,
alert.
he's my choice too, and I'll tell you something else later.
There's a double spoiler alert. God, what are we, French? What the hell, man?
Well, you know, maybe he has a bad game, and we have to revise it. We'll see. Other news that we'd heard whispers of the last few days, but got confirmation today. Brandon Allen has been. Acquired. I'm
acquired.
Interested. Was a fee paid? Is there considerations?
I would bet not.
Is there a hotel room or a bus involved?
Is there team balls coming back the other way?
I don't know. Can we get some? Can we get some Memphis fried chicken?
I would be surprised at this point if there was any fee at all. I've got a feeling that this is just one of those situations where being in the division that we're in. It's probably one of those, he didn't want to be here because he knew he wasn't going to get playing time with everybody getting healthy again.
Right.
And he wanted to play. And everybody's like, rather than paying somebody for not doing anything, let's just go ahead and let him go over to Memphis.
Yeah, tear up the contract, let him sign there.
Just kind of turn a blind eye and, we'll let you go over here.
Yeah, I mean, he was, and we talked about this at the beginning of the season, one of the guys, we started out with seven forwards on the roster. And Malik didn't get to play early on the season because he was injured. Jaime Siaj hasn't played this year yet because of injury, but I hear he's getting close to, I wouldn't be surprised if he might pop up on the bench in the next week or two. But now that you've got Malik in, and I think they've gotten to see what they needed to see from him, and Tejada was a question mark coming into the season. How is he going to play in his first season as a pro? And has obviously established that he's got the quality and the ability to do that, that there's going to be an odd man or two out in some of these positions.
Yeah, and that's part of the thing, too, is this roster right now, I mean, we were talking about versatility, right? Like, having the depth and having the versatility of being able to switch players around. We're now at a point in the season, finally, with everybody healthy. Granted, we've only got 23 players, which is still a little weird, but that it's so low. In some ways, but now that we're healthy, we're in a position that we can really start having some fun doing some mixing and matching.
Do you foresee this maybe being part of also acquiring some new players, bringing in some new faces?
Well, okay, so if we're going to speculate about player movement, I mean, the Brandon Allen thing isn't really that surprising. Here's the thing that's going to get me. Does anybody out there in the global soccerdom of sports, does anybody make an offer for Jakite? That's the big question, because he is literally the reason why we've had the best defense in second division in America. It's literally him. It's a three set back. It's literally him being this just dominant like force of nature. Does anybody out there give a shot at bringing him on?
Well, and here's, I haven't paid enough attention to MLS to say to know whether or not, you know, who might be helped by a defender. So I'm not sure. I don't know if there's any, because I think it would have to be an MLS move. I don't know if you're going to get that many eyes from overseas, especially, you know, they're just gearing up for preseason. Maybe he would be invited in for a trial or something, based on offer, but I don't see us letting him, go and do something like that.
It's hard to say, though. I mean, look, 2012. I mean, let's rewind the clock a little bit. So 2012, Yoshitaki, we are dominating the NASL.
Going back to the last time we gave up our best player?
No, there's another example I'm about to show up.
Okay.
So Yoshitaki, we were killing the NASL. And we ended up allowing Yoshitaki to go to the Hong Kong League, I believe is where he ended up going, because it was like a B team for like a team from southern Japan or
right.
Something that played as a sister club.
I was convinced we were doomed that year when that happened.
Well, we almost did, because we sold him. He was like the attacking heart of our club. And he goes over to the Hong Kong League, and our team just stumbles its way into the playoffs. That was what everybody was saying, is we did nothing but, like, draw our way into the playoffs.
Right.
So that's example number one. Example number two and example number three are 2 years ago. Damian Lowe and Deshaun Brown. Because here we are, two years ago, we had a great season going. Great season. And what do? Like, a couple months, like, right in July, I think it was, right when we're looking at the fact that we're going to have this great playoff seed, this is going to be a great playoff run, what do? We allow Damian Lowe and Deshaun Brown to walk away. Now, granted, from what I understand, there were contractual reasons why that had to happen. But there's a trend with this team where if we've been good, we tend to let people go.
Yeah.
And that kind of scares me because, like I said, of all the players, there's two players that I would think are decent targets, Jaquite, and if Caleb Richards gets an early recall to join Norwich as a part of their preseason.
I can see that, or even if they call him back early just to give him a rest before the preseason starts.
Yeah, I could see a situation where they might request, I mean, just like with Marcel Schaefer in Wolfsburg, our season started to go bad, and so they asked for Marcel earlier. Because that was always the part of the agreement that he would go back. Well, here you've got a lone player who's been phenomenal at our level. It would not surprise me at all if somebody from Norwich picks up the phone and says, hey, we kind of want to invite him over to camp. Would you mind if we kind of switched him out with somebody else and sent somebody else over to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, well, and I don't remember if I told you about this, but I did see they did have an announcement late last week, early this week, about a signing of a kid who they said would probably go into the U-17s right now, but is somebody they're big on for the future. So I would not be surprised if part of that, the early part of that future, ends up with a stint through St. Pete.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all wild speculation, right? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but I would think that those are two players that, if you might see more movement from players leaving, I think that would be the two that I would look at as possibilities. Now, as far as acquisitions go, I mean, really the sky's the limit. It's just up to what the Rays and what Cohen want to spend on. As far as players acquisition, we've only got 23 players, and three of them are goalies. We're down to 20 field players. That's not a lot.
So you agree with me that we're going to see David Silva here then?
No. We're going to do the most ultimate...
You're shaking your head yes for the people at home who can't see this.
No, we're going to do the ultimate surprise move, and it's going to be the infamous Zlatan to Rowdies. That is the groundbreaking rule. Because what's
they're
going to
do it for Pendleton.
No, because we're going to do this. We're going to do this with the Montreal theme. Okay, we're gonna use the pitch of having Zlatan to come in here to be a part of an MLS joint stadium proposal to do the Montreal thing, to do everything all at once. It's gonna be this one massive splash thing.
We're gonna bring in LA Galaxy for the Suncoast Invitational next year.
There it is.
And then not let Zlatan go.
Hashtag confirmed.
All right. So I guess we need to get to this then now. The Rays, we'll have to do some background detail on this for the people listening who aren't as, you know, in the area, because I know we have some listeners from outside Tampa Bay. Listen to this. Tampa Bay Rays, Major League Baseball, as of the end of last season, are now the owners of the Tampa Bay Rowdies. The Rays have had consistent problems drawing crowds to Tropicana Field for baseball games. However, they are stuck there in a lease until 2027. The Rays' primary owner, managing partner, whatever you want to call him, Stu Sternberg, floated the idea, I guess, at the Major League Baseball owners' meetings, and news got out, and then it's being addressed locally now, that they would like to explore the possibility of playing half of their home games in Tampa Bay, in a brand new stadium in Tampa Bay, and half of their home games in a brand new stadium in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Starting, he says, probably in 2024, if everything was to work out right. If you could get two stadiums built, they'd have to get permission from the government of St. Pete because of the terms of the lease, which at this point doesn't sound likely at all, and this all might be a moot point to even talk about, but it's what we're talking about because it's what we've been talking about. in a press conference yesterday at the Dolly, which I got to say, I thought that was an inspired choice to have the press conference there and then to have the guy introduce fellow surrealists. I can have some problems or some questions about how they're doing this, but I appreciated the pageantry involved in that part at least. Sternberg and Brian Auld, who is one of the co-chairmen of the Rowdies, described the idea. Stu mentioned the idea at one point of a open-air stadium, smaller configuration, because basically they would play their spring home games in Tampa Bay when it's not like burning hot yet. And then when summer rolls around and we have heat advisories telling us to stay indoors, that they would be in Montreal to play games up there. Whether or not Montreal is a good spot to go to, I mean, they don't have a team anymore because no one went to watch them either. And we're not going to talk a bunch of baseball stuff here, but it was mentioned the possibility of building a stadium that could host the spring Rays home games as well as soccer games, which we assume, seeing as how Stu never mentioned the name Rowdies, that this is what it's referring to. And this got a lot of people, ourselves included, slightly inquisitive, bit upset.
Just a bit.
Because as we know from Louisville, as we know from Vegas, as we know from Steinbrenner Field, as we know from Yankee Stadium, as we know from lots of places, soccer in baseball stadiums doesn't work out. It doesn't work out for the soccer teams, and it doesn't work out for the baseball teams either. It's not a good fit for either side of the situation. So, Steven, I broke this down into what we don't know, which is a lot. What we do know, which I think is very little, and what we think we know, which is like one or two things. So to start off, what we don't know.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about this, and this is where we have to start with this whole conversation. They can't do anything without getting some kind of approval from the city first.
You know, I saw. Were you following along with the press conference or on Twitter yesterday when that happened?
Yeah, I was.
So there was some comments where Stu had mentioned, you know, talking to the guys in Montreal and kind of establishing a timeline and setting some parameters.
And everybody went, isn't that breaking the lease agreement?
That itself might be a lease violation. Yeah.
Like, hello.
Because they had to get permission from city council just to even go talk to people in Tampa or look at places in Tampa.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Here's what we don't know. What we don't know about this plan is literally everything.
Basically, yeah.
And it's funny because we want to say that out front, but here's the reality. There's literally no plan for where they actually want to build an open air stadium. There's literally no plan.
You want to know a place that got mentioned?
I'm gonna get there.
Al Lang.
I'm gonna get there.
That was mentioned.
But
it's a possibility.
I'm just
thinking about it.
But here's the thing, and this is where Sternberg and them were saying is like this conversation about a split season doesn't even, like, we don't even get to the stadium part if we don't agree to that first.
Right.
And if you listen to a lot of the media heads around here, if you read the stories, everybody is saying that there's no chance
if you follow Mayor Kreisman on Twitter
that they're ever going to agree with a split home stadium thing. So there's a degree of, why are we even worried about a split stadium thing with the Rays and the Rowdies combining if they're never even going to get to that point?
Yeah.
So there's one perspective there where we can almost kind of sit back and just laugh at the next 5 years of them just kind of fumbling around again. But what else we know or what else we don't know? Here's something. There were four sites that were kind of named. All of them were all basically named before.
Right.
Right. Is building another stadium at the Trop. Building a stadium at Derby Lane, which apparently got shot down already apparently the ground isn't suitable for having a building of that size there because of flood issues and the type of sand that it's there. Something I heard.
Right.
I don't know if it's true, but it's something I did hear. Obviously, Ybor still being floated for a possibility because that stadium might work out with a smaller price tag for that location. So that's still kind of being floated. But then, of course, the one that's most relevant to us as Rowdies fans was that the idea of building an Al Lang Stadium, which there's problems with that. And right before we went on the air, we put out an article. Jake Nutting did an exclusive interview with Brian Ault and Lee Cohen. And we put the article out literally right before we went on air. And first of all, here's the scary part. They were not expecting the vitriol from Rowdy's fans.
Yeah.
About this proposal. They didn't think that we would have an opinion about this at all. Which is amazing, because what did we literally just do 2 years ago? We literally just convinced the city for a special election with the help of Rick Baker, with the help of, I mean, obviously Bill Edwards was a big part of that. We literally just got the city to say with, what, an 87% vote for those that actually showed up and passed their ballots to say, yes, let's build an exclusive soccer stadium renovation for an MLS expansion at Al Lang. Why would anybody think that 2 years later, only 2 years, in fact, in some ways, it's almost less than 2 years later, the idea of then sharing a stadium at the same location would be tolerable to anybody that wears green and gold every weekend. How is that even fathomable that you would not think that we would have an angry reaction to that?
Well, that's
we have a home. We have a building that is literally only ours. To go from that to a shared facility is a step down in every way of defining it.
Yeah, my single overriding concern in this is the impact it has on the playing surface, because we've lived through Steinbrenner. We've lived through Al Lang with a baseball diamond and with pitch oriented in different directions to where we are now, which, say what you want about Al Lang being a former baseball stadium or, you know, not having, you know, a traditional stand set up or whatever, we have one of the nicest surfaces to play on in all of American soccer in any level.
I'm going to say this. It's second division American soccer. I think Al Lang is one of the best stadiums in the league, period.
Yeah.
I mean, even aside from pitch. Which, granted, the team that does that is an amazing team. And I respect every one of them for the work that they do there, for the work that they do at the practice field up at USF St. Pete, for the work they do at the facility for Tampa Bay Youth Soccer up at the Waters Complex and maintaining that facility. They are amazing what they do. But I think the building as it is still, I mean, after what, nine? This is the ninth season we've played at Al Lang.
Yep.
We've won a championship in that building. I'm sorry, but it's starting to grow on me. That building is growing on me as a home where I'm just like, I don't give a crap about the quirks of it. I don't give a crap about the deficiencies about it anymore. I absolutely just love this place.
I love that you can go out in the concourse during a rainstorm and still not get soaked like we used to.
But I mean, like,
so that's, yeah, one of the things we don't know is how this, if it came to being an Al Lang thing, would happen.
Well, here's what we do know about that.
Okay.
And there's been some disagreement as far as some media heads from a lot of different places not understanding what it meant when the Rays bought the Rowdies.
And then flat out lying when confronted with source documentation.
Not lying. People just say, I don't care, I'm going with my own narrative.
Well, yeah.
I mean, and that was like, I don't care, I'm not going back and redoing my story. Like, they literally don't care if they're printing anything with facts. So here's the facts. When the Rays bought the Rowdies, they did not buy the stadium.
No. Nope.
You want to know why? Because the Rowdies did not own the stadium.
Right. And I went back and I listened to the audio from this call earlier, and then I was chatting with Jake about it while he's writing it up. And because I wanted him to get someone from the Rays on record with what they, or at least in their view, was the situation with them in Al Lang. And Brian Ault says it in the call. We don't control anything. We're managers. We don't own it. We can't do whatever we want. Nothing can be done without the approval of council and a referendum outside of the MLS referendum that was passed before. Like,
yep.
They can't go doing whatever what they want, despite the people who are trying to tell you that that's exactly what they can do.
Yeah, they're wrong. Those people that say that they can do whatever they want are flat out wrong. They would need to get a new agreement in place, a new referendum, to have an extended conversation about with the city negotiating a long-term lease of the land. Then they would have to go through the city council process for any kind of an actual stadium design.
And then they would have to have it voted on by the county again, by the voters in a referendum. And I can't.
I don't know about the second vote. I
think if you're building a new stadium on that site, because it meets the description of a substantial change of
the use of the site.
Because when the MLS lease was just the MLS vote was just a vote to extend a 25-year lease,
and only if it came with an MLS franchise.
Only if it came with an MLS
franchise,
right?
So that's the important thing here is the fact that that referendum. Because some people were making a comment about the fact that whether that referendum would carry over to the Rowdies or to the Rays. Here's the thing: is that it doesn't apply to what they're looking to do. With the possibility of a jointly owned building or a joint shared facility, unless there actually is an MLS push that would have a combined stadium at Al Lang. That is the only scenario where I can think of that they could use the referendum as voted without having to go through another referendum process.
Possibly. There would have to be some. I mean, that's kind of the escape hatch is, hey, we've got the MLS approval. And in the language, it says primary but not sole use of the property.
But
there's still, I thought of this afternoon. There's another thing that factors into this is that parking lot at Al Lang, like where the Skyway Casuals tailgate, and they call it the Turn 5 tailgate because it's Turn 5 of the St. Pete Grand Prix. Are they going to be able to do anything on that site that doesn't impact upon that race being held there? Because that is always seen as a priority of the city is maintaining that.
Well, I mean, even if you have to redo the road network a little bit, I don't see that being a problem because you're just going to do the racetrack around the building. It doesn't really change anything on that front.
Maybe not. But then the other thing is, if you do have to go to a referendum trying to get voters that you have now pissed off with taking away half their baseball games to vote for your stadium, I don't see happening either. So I, you know, it's put out there, and it's something that got all of our attention and raised our dander a little bit. It to me is, I mean, I think this entire thing is an exercise in futility to begin with.
Of course it is.
Redoing something at Al Lang, I think, you know, they're willing to listen to any possibility that gets this done. I don't think that actually gets done. And look, I'm gonna be honest here. I don't care what happens with the Rays. I don't care if they play half their games here, half their games in Montreal. I don't care if they move to Montreal. I don't care if they, like, just get contracted, other in the way that it impacts us. And all things being considered, you know, I know we have a lot of friends and fans and listeners who are also, you know, big fans of the Rays. So I guess if I had to make one choice, I'd say keep them in the area because I know a lot of people are into it. My main concern is how this affects us playing in a facility, and to his credit, all directly addresses that and says if that were to happen, it's something that they would address in the build of the stadium. They mentioned in the call and in the article Jake wrote it up too, the possibility of hosting USF football games there, which in my opinion is never going to happen if you can't fill Raymond James.
That's dead before it even hits the ground.
But they're very aware of the concern. The impact that infield dirt would have on this and building around that. I will say, and you know, I'm not going to put the entire audio out there. Maybe we'll have clips or stuff from it because there was some stuff off there that, you know, that's just kind of this random discussion. There's no, like, mustache-twirling villains in this scenario. Maybe people look at Stu Sternberg that way, but it's not
I look at Stu Sternberg that way, but I mean,
listening to these guys and the stuff they have to say, and especially with Lee Cohen on there as well, and kind of giving his putting his name, his voice to vouch for some of it. Like, I truly believe that they're sincere in wanting to do right by both teams, honestly, and both teams' fans. I don't know if they're capable. I don't think this idea flies anywhere in the Bay Area. I'm going to wait to get really mad until I have something really specific to get mad about.
Yeah, and that's part of the thing, too, right? In the article that we posted, that Jake did with the interview, right before we went on the air, one thing about that that's really important is the fact that we asked a direct question. What if the Rays get the approval for a split for a sister city franchise. What if the Al Lang thing doesn't actually happen and they build it at a different location, whether the Trop, whether Ybor, something of that nature? What would happen to the Rowdies? Would they try and forcibly move the Rowdies out of Al Lang to go to a stadium, say, in Ybor? Now, Auld was kind of non-committal to that answer. I mean, granted, everything is hypothetical right now anyway, so
right.
He's not going to commit to anything before it, like, you know, a pencil has hit paper for a sketch. I mean, we're still way before we have to really have those kinds of discussions. But he did specifically say, he's like, look, if it depends on the economics of it all. In a lot of ways, that was basically the answer he said, is that if it makes sense to keep the Rowdies at Al Lang as like an independent thing from whatever the Rays are doing for a stadium idea, he says, then we'll explore that option. So here's my takeaway from that. We need butts in the freaking seats
exactly.
at Al Lang to
exactly.
make that a fortress for soccer only, because that's going to be the only way of convincing this, is
mm-hmm.
that if we can show that there are people there, which it's a mystery to me why we don't have 7,700 people there every week after 10 years, but we need to show that that is a solid location for a soccer team, that we're all happy with that as it is, because we also need to be in a position where if they say they want to try and move us out of there, say for Ybor to join with a Rays thing, or if they want to try and force the Rays into that building, I want to be in a position where if we all rebel and say no and put our foot down and say no, that they have to listen and that they can't consider that.
What would you say, because I've seen this option floated around, this idea, and I've thought about it a little bit, of a baseball stadium at Al Lang with the Trop site redeveloped for a soccer-specific stadium for the Rowdies.
So funny enough about that, we actually talked about that a year ago. It was actually a poll question that I put out on Twitter a year ago, literally, this, because it was something that was floated in a part of the discussions and things about that. Most people would prefer to stay at Al Lang rather than a brand sparkling new soccer-specific stadium at the Trop site. That was the poll results. In fact, what surprised me about that poll result is that it wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it was something like 60 or 70% of people voted. Granted, it's unscientific. It was just Twitter.
Right.
But it was literally 60 to 70% of people saying they would prefer to stay at Al Lang or a renovated Al Lang rather than a brand new Louisville City type soccer specific jewel at Tropicana on in the parking lot with
right.
the redevelopment. That was stunning to me about a poll result, but that was a year ago. That was before we were talking about all of this. That was before this was even a twinkle in anybody's eye. Before the Rays even announced that they purchased the Rowdies, before that ever came out as a topic of conversation, that was literally before all of that happened. And Rowdies fans resoundingly said they would prefer to stay at Al Lang.
Okay, would you accept it?
Look, I was the president of Ralph's Mob the year that we went from NASL to USL.
So this is your fault?
You listen here. You don't blame me for this. No. Look, there was a significant amount of responsibility for that, of like how we reacted as a supporter group was going to define the future of the club.
Right.
Because if we had decided at that moment that we were going to walk away from the whole thing and say we reject the USL system and the USL's ownership style, that we were going to kill the Rowdies that year. Like we were prepared to walk away from it all. Like, that was some of the theories that were out there, because it was either you're going to go or you're not, you know, to a USL Rowdies team. And we decided to take the measured approach and saying, look, is it what we want? Do we want to play two teams? No, nobody wants to. Everybody wants to play independently run teams with history and everything else. We get it. But at the same time, we're here not to support ownership. We're here to support the 11 players on the pitch that say that have Tampa Bay across their chest.
Are you setting me up for a really good segue here?
No.
Because with that in mind, because we've only got a few minutes left, should we talk about Ottawa?
No, we're going to talk to Oliver. It's easy.
Okay.
But for me, it's if it's forced upon me, I'm not going to abandon the guys on the pitch. Because to me, that's what it's all about.
Right.
And that's been my position from the beginning, is that I'm not there for any of the politics going on. I'm literally there because I love the guys that wear Tampa Bay on their shirts. That's who I'm there for. That's why I do what I do. That's why I love this club. That's why I'm a supporter. And why even if that happened with the Rays, you know, in 5 or 6 years,
mm-hmm.
I would still go and I would still support the guys.
All right, so Stephen Cundiff supports moving the Rays to Tropicana Field.
I hate everything about you, Matt. No, it's
which, if I remember correctly, the Rowdies are the sole owners of Tropicana Field and can do whatever they want to it, right?
You know, there was actually a thought of that, of what if the Rowdies had one game at Tropicana Field? Just one. Just one.
Can I tell you from all my research this week what that means? The Rowdies play one game at Tropicana Field just because they want to. Council can cancel their lease at Al Lang. Any game not played at Al Lang for any reason, not due to like...
Well, then never mind.
You know, natural disaster or stadiums or like something it can be used as grounds to terminate the lease.
Well, that's kind of weird. Well, then I guess that wouldn't happen.
That's the two ways that the council can terminate is if the Rowdies are not a member of MLS, USL, NASL, or if they play elsewhere without a basically valid excuse.
Fascinating. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I've been researching agreements and leases and all kinds of stuff. The City Council of St. Pete does a very good job of keeping good minutes and agendas to have all this information out there. All right, we will continue to follow this as it develops, as it seems like it will, for about 5 years.
Yeah.
Roughly. But right now, we are going to talk about what we do know is that the Rowdies are playing Ottawa Fury on Saturday at Al Lang for this year's Pride Night. Ottawa, last year, 2018, I think last year was first year in USL, right? They hung out in NASL for an extra year. 10th in the East, did not qualify for the playoffs. This year they are currently 6-2-6, 2-1-4 away in 7th place. Leading scorers are Moore Sam with 6 goals, Wall Fall with 5 goals, and Cristiano Francois with 4 goals. You might remember the name Wall Fall. He's the one that scored the only goal against us in Rochester for our loss in Rochester the first year in USL. Leading assists, Sam has 4. Carl Hayworth, who goes back to NASL days with Ottawa, 3. Francois with 3 as well. Chances created, Hayworth, 29. Sam, 14. And Fall, 13. Their offense clearly revolves around these three guys. They've kept 5 clean sheets all year. They've conceded 14 goals. About one-third of their goals have come from outside of the box, one on a direct free kick. So it's a team you've got to keep an eye on from distance as well. They've shown the ability to do this so far. It's going to be an interesting matchup. They haven't done great away from home. However, Popovic, who was their head coach, took over as their head coach last year. He's 2 wins or 3 wins away from becoming the winningest Ottawa Fury coach, taking the lead over Mark Dos Santos and doing it in about 10 less games. So they've definitely made some improvements with their playing personnel. They've definitely made some improvements with their coaching structure as well. It's not the same old Ottawa. You don't have a keeper saving the ball and lying on the pitch for 5 minutes. They're still not a prolific scoring offense, but they are a different Ottawa team than we faced in the past.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Like, again, they suck on the road. They're 2-1-4 away. Like, granted, they play on a plastic pitch at home, so, you know, that might be a part of it. But, they play a 4-3-3, okay? They're 3 midfielders that primarily play minutes. Fall, Ward, and Manella have been fantastic. They have been a dominant force, and that's a reason why they've had so many draws in a row. Like, they haven't lost a game in like 4 or 5. In fact, I'd have to go and double check the results tonight.
Yeah, we'll see where they are right now, but I know going in this game I think they've drawn 4 of their last 5 and won the other,
something like that. Yeah, so I mean, that is a team that we're going to be in a really tough battle for the midfield, where it's going to be a question of how much pressure we want to put on, because again, it's a 4-3-3, just like what the Steel did against us. So if we can play the same way that we played in Bethlehem and do that here at home in front of a good fired up home crowd, we can dominate this team just like we did Bethlehem. I absolutely for sure believe that. But it's going to take that level of intensity. It's going to take our three midfield positions getting in there. Now, here's the big question for you. With Leo Fernandez back, who and where do you put players for kind of formational tweaks with everybody healthy? Do you think we see anything major change? Do we see any minor changes? Are we going to see everything the same? What is your take?
I think you still see Malik this weekend.
Okay, where?
In that spot where he's kind of been playing, because he's on the roster as a forward, but he's kind of played, has he played that kind of that left wing spot a little bit?
He's played as both midfielders, both outside mids.
Okay.
This was the question that I had, is maybe you see him as a striker just to keep him on the field? I don't know.
I think you might see him come in as a striker when Tejada misses a game for qualifying, but I think...
July 20th.
Yeah, honestly, I think Neil Rolls is what's been working for him right now.
Fair enough.
All right, we need to wrap this up because we're going to lose the ability to give any good sound coming out here in just a few minutes. I'm going to send my We Love You out to our good friend Dan and his cat. Rest in peace, Pickles. Steven, you got a We Love You?
You would put me on the spot. No. You're terrible. I didn't even think about it.
Steven doesn't love anybody. All right, thank you to our friends Wolfface for the music, Radio St. Pete, and Shamrock Pub for hosting us tonight. Thank you to you guys for continuing to make time in your schedule to listen to us live or later. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review. If you'd like to support the show on an ongoing basis, visit our Patreon, patreon.com/unusedsubspod. Thank you again to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and U.S. Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team, even if they play in two cities, at roughneckscarves.com. This is a part where we play the theme, the exit music, but don't have it handy, so it'll play after my voice
the
when I edit in later.
A kick in the grass. Go
predictions.
Rowdies!
2-1 for the Rowdies.
I'm going to do another 2-0.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
All around. The rally's one here, the rally's one there, and I pull around.